Yeah.
How the hell are you?
Oh, my God. I just bought a PS4.
Oh, good for you, man.
Yeah, getting all the video games in.
Getting them all in, huh?
Getting them all in.
Yeah, you were playing with that Switch for a while.
I still am, but, you know, there's stuff coming out on the PS4, too, so.
Sexy stuff.
And, you know, with the PS5 coming out already.
I know.
Which I don't even know what that means anymore. Like,
what?
The fact that, like, oh, PS5 is coming out. It's like, so are you not, like, how long are you still going to make games for PS4, though?
Right, exactly.
Because, like, the games look exactly the same. Like, eventually, right. Like, someone put up something on Twitter today that was really interesting, where they showed the same game on a system. It was just, like, a racing game. It was something from, like, England.
Uh-huh.
And it was the same game on a system from 1990, 1992, and 1994. And, like, the leaps could not be more massive between them.
Right. But now it's like...
Now it'd be like if you went from, like, okay, this is this game in 2012,
right,
2015, and 2020, you'd maybe notice a little difference.
I don't know if it's... But notice, I don't think it's all on the screen. You know what I mean? I don't think it's all shows.
Right. Once, like, think of the leap. Like, once we hit PlayStation and, like, you could put full motion video on the CD.
Yeah.
Like, that felt huge.
That was a big leap.
Like, I remember watching, or playing, rather, like, wrestling video games just to watch, like, the intro.
Yes.
Because it was like, oh, real footage.
Real footage.
Or, like, the Tony Hawk games where, like, the big thing you could win in the games was, like, unlockable videos.
Yeah. So have you gotten into any side quests on Spider-Man? You collecting the school bags yet?
No, I've really just been like flying. I did the first couple of missions and then I started like just flying around the city because you can kind of just get lost doing like the little side quests.
I really think it might be the best game ever. It is. It's like Arkham Asylum is the beginning of it. And then from that, like, let's perfect this type of thing.
Right, because Arkham Asylum didn't have the sandbox element to it.
No. I almost want to say the word perfect. It's just so good. And it's a good story later on in his timeline, which I feel like, especially the movies, doesn't realize that you can have a good Spider-Man story with him as an adult, with him as working as a scientist, with him without him as the young kid.
Well, the problem with the movies is they had to go young kid.
Yeah.
Because the Raimi ones tried to have it both ways. And then the Andrew Garfield ones kind of also tried to have it both. Like, they all tried to have this, like, weird in-between period.
Right.
And then Disney came along and was like, no, we're just going to... He's in high school.
He's just a boy. All right. Well, Vin, welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm your host. I'm here today with the incomparable Vin Forte, co-host of Rassle Rap.
Yeah.
Co-host of PCMC, a lot of episodes. Vin, I said to you, son of a gun, I want you to, what's something you want to talk about?
Yeah.
Something that I don't know about that you can talk about. And you said, let me meditate on this.
Yeah.
And I'll get back to you. And you came back to me with comic strips, not comic books.
Right.
Not your Spider-Mans and your pages and your 21 pages or whatever. 22, don't at me. Comic strips like you find in newspapers.
Like the Sunday funnies.
The funnies.
Yeah. But I specifically wanted this topic because out of everything in media, this is like the hardest thing to explain to someone who didn't live through it.
What do you think is hard to explain to, I guess, a younger audience?
Just how, like, the concept is easy enough. Like, hey, when people read newspapers more, there was a whole section on Sundays,
right,
and like throughout the week,
right,
where it was just like a thing of comics, like 7 or 8 pages of just comics,
right,
in full color, where the rest of the newspaper except the ads was just black and white.
Well, on Sundays it would be
full color. On Sundays it would be full color. You get like a full color insert of comics. Right. And it was like a treat. Like every week would be like, oh, wow, like, give me the comics. Like you ask your parents, like, give me the comics section.
I think you could explain this to a younger audience if you said kind of like memes.
Well, no. The like, explain the concept is easy.
Oh, okay.
What's not easy is telling someone, hey, so, like, if you showed someone the Sunday comics right now, if you, like, were like, here's an artifact of it.
Yeah.
You'd be like, you guys understand this, right? And they're like, okay, we kind of get it. But then go there and be like, you see Garfield?
Yeah.
He fucking ruled the world.
He is.
He had dolls, toys, video games, several movies starring Bill Murray.
Yes.
TV
specials.
An endless, mugs, an endless t-shirts, run of, school of bags, books.
A very, very famous phone. A very, very famous
car
plushie. Thing. You could, yeah, the plushie that you could stick to your car. About a year ago was the 40th anniversary of Garfield. And Vice went to interview the creator of Garfield, Jim Davis.
Oh, boy.
And they went to his studio, which is in Muncie, Indiana, which is where he's from, also where Mike Pence is from, or where Mike Pence was.
Look up that photo of the both of them.
I know. So they handed out Halloween candy together one year, and I think it's called Pause Production.
Yeah,
and it's all about the toys. And it's funny. Oh, yeah. The Vice guy was like, "Do you think you're going to be Garfield will be remembered more as a comic or like?" Almost like a deity, like just a physical thing. And he's like, well, you know, and then the Vice guy's like, do you think of these things as these artifacts as art? He's really giving them, this is a puff piece as much as Vice can give you a puff piece.
Yeah.
Cause it's still trying to ask you cutting questions, but like, he's really giving them a lot of slack.
Yeah.
He's like, do you think all of these toys and things is art? You know, really helping Jim Davis out. Yeah. And Jim Davis is like, well, no. He's like, I hope that it makes people happy, and I hope that it looks good, and I hope it helps you express yourself. Like, a mug that says, oh, I hate Mondays. If you hate Mondays, that mug will help you express it at work, or whatever.
Yeah, it's weird, like, I'm not even going to say in preparation for this episode, because I'm not going to leave the Facebook group, but, like, I joined a Facebook group this past week.
Okay.
That was, like, a Garfield fan Facebook group.
Okay.
And the sincere love some people have for Garfield is kind of endearing. Like, people being like, hey, like, when it switched to February now, like, some lady posted, like, hey, switching to February now, better swap out my Garfield table. And she has, like, a whole table full of, like, Garfield paraphernalia that she then switches to Valentine's Day-themed Garfield paraphernalia. Wow. So it's like, this lady has a Garfield stash for every season.
Garfield is still going, by the way.
Oh, yeah. And
but not
Jim
really
Davis doesn't
being
write
by,
it.
Yeah, I think he's still the name on it. Yeah. But, yeah. Garfield, and I'm getting this information on Wikipedia, the most trusted source on the internet. Garfield first began in 1976. It was first published as John. It was called John.
Yeah.
Way to bury the lead.
Who wants to read John?
It became syndicated the next year in 1978, and it's still going. It claims that it's the most syndicated strip. I wonder if it's at least tied with Peanuts.
Yeah.
When I think comic strips, the first thing in my head is Peanuts.
Well, the crazy thing about Peanuts is that there hasn't been a new one in years.
It was
like 20 years.
It was a perfect 50 years. It started in 1950. It ended in 2000.
And
he
just
did 50 years. Yes. Well, there's so much of it.
Well, yeah, 50 years. But it's crazy that, like, it still gets the prime real estate. Like, going back to, like, the comics insert in the Sunday Funnies, like, you'd have all the comics inside, but then, like, you knew what the marquee ones were.
Yeah, sure.
Because it's like, because they would get, like, four different lines.
Yeah.
So you get, like, the big Peanuts one, you get the Garfield one.
Right. What's interesting about the Peanuts one is, on a normal day, the black and white comic would be basically four squares. Very simple.
Yeah.
But on Sunday, it'd be color and it'd be six. But he would make the first two unimportant enough that if you had to cut them, you could to redo them. So if you read the Sundays, the first two are part of it, but also you can start on the fourth and it would make sense. Weird logic to it.
Yeah. Also, what used to, or I guess, like, not freak me out, but like a concept that I couldn't grasp as a kid, is like, you get so used to reading your version of the newspaper.
Yeah.
And then when I would go to visit, like, an aunt in Pennsylvania and, like, get her newspaper, like the comics would be in a different order.
Yeah.
And like there would be comics that like I wasn't getting in New York.
Sure, yeah.
So it'd be like, I remember a specific one was, I think, like her comic strips in Pennsylvania had like Beetle Bailey, and like we didn't get Beetle Bailey.
What are your, well, I don't think I've ever read Beetle Bailey. I know him.
It's Gomer Pyle.
That's all it is, right?
That's all it is.
Okay.
I liked the more, because there's like, there was a whole structure to it. Yeah. And the structure was normally like, you have the heavy hitters on the front.
Yeah.
You have the notable ones like on the next couple pages. Then you had like a couple political ones.
Yeah.
Like your Funky Winker Beans.
Yeah.
And then you have like the real esoteric ones, like the Gary Larson, like Far Side.
Right.
Or like Speed Bump.
Right.
And then you'd have like the ones that I didn't really, maybe I'd appreciate them more now, but like on the back page was always like the information ones.
Yeah.
Where it'd be like, here's a story about George Washington Carver. Like,
interesting. I never looked at those.
And then that would also be where like Kathy was.
There was also a Spider-Man.
I was literally just going to bring that up because it's the worst fucking Spider-Man
because comic ever. It's like watching a movie 4 seconds at a time.
And yeah. Like,
and I think it was its own continuity as well.
Yeah. It's this weird like 4-panel strip, even on Sundays.
Right.
And like your Sunday comic of Spider-Man could literally just be like, oh, Spider-Man, here's his trouble. He changes his outfit and then like flies away and then that's your comic.
Whereas at least the funny ones would have a joke. It would often be at least one single joke.
No, you got nothing. I don't know what you're ever supposed to gain from it.
You're supposed to remember and every single day consume a little bit more.
Not me. No way.
Speaking of that, do you remember what's his name? Matt Oswalt, the brother of Patton Oswalt and Eddie Pepitone. They tried this thing a few years ago. Yeah, Puddin', which was supposed to be like a video strip. They were like little videos, and it was very much like Dilbert, I guess, because it was like we're living. This is like the break room of a business,
but it was like deconstructed to the craziest degree,
right? And I don't know how long it actually lasted, but they did try to do it every day for a while.
Yeah, they would just like they would film like every 2 months they would just meet up,
yeah,
and film a bunch of them, and they would just be like a minute each,
yeah,
and it would be like Eddie Pepitone like runs into the room naked with a knife and like says some manifesto and then that's it.
Right. Like one I remember distinctly is, and this was made in like 2010. He's reading a newspaper and it's like the 9th anniversary of 2001. And he's looking at it. And he's like, hey, what happened down there? Cut to black.
And then like,
just the idea of a guy who doesn't know what 9/11 is.
And every once in a while, like, I guess through his connection with Patton, he would get, like, these insane guest stars.
Yeah.
Robin Williams was in a bunch of them.
That's so crazy. Because they probably shot 30 at a time.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, well, you're here.
Yeah, like Weird Al was in a couple of them.
That's so funny. But, you know, that's an interesting thing because that's a video, a web series, let's say, that's trying to mimic what, like, the comic strips were.
Yeah.
But in a more organic way, I'd say something like Vine and now TikTok is much more. Just think about it. They are one joke delivery systems.
Yeah.
Just here's one joke. Boom. You got it. You want more? That's it.
Though I feel like there's a trick to Vine, which is a lot of the best stuff is the stuff that leaves you on a cliffhanger.
Right.
Where like the joke is that you're not getting the ending. Like a lot of it's like something bad is happening and you're going to see like
right
the before and then like a second of it.
Right. Yeah, the editing. I was talking about this recently, like just the stopping, like the and then it's over. Like you don't see the hit happen or you don't see the full even shout.
Like I was watching one the other day where it was like this big old lady and she was just like she had a big thing of Coke and like Mentos of her, and she was like,
"Oh yeah, I saw that.
See what this is all about. See what this does."
And
she puts the Mentos in, and it's just like, but you see like, this like the first second of it hitting her face,
and it's like exactly what you think it's gonna be.
Yeah,
and it like you're like, is this for real or what?
Or like the famous one of the kid where he's like back at it again at Krispy Kreme, and he's like inside a Krispy Kreme, and he does like 3 backflips. And then on the last one, he gets really high and, like, he kicks the Krispy Kreme sign off the wall. But, like, you just see it, like, kick off the wall and like halfway fall to the floor and then it cuts.
Yeah. Did you, you know what's a comic strip that I never could wrap my head around?
Ooh, let me guess. Foxtrot?
No. Hagar. I didn't like that either. I didn't like Hagar at all. But at least I got it.
Wizard of Id?
No. Family Circus.
Oh, Family Circus sucks.
I don't think, like Hagar, right? I get it. It's caveman humor, whatever that is.
Yeah.
But I don't like it, but I get it. I don't think I understand what Family Circus is even supposed to be. What is it?
I think it's trying to be too cute for its own good.
I'm gonna
pull up a Family Circus strip right now.
I don't think I've ever once laughed at a Family Circus. Whereas, I laugh. I was looking up stuff yesterday, and I like genuinely, I'll laugh at a Garfield, or I'll laugh at a Peanuts.
Family Circus, okay. Family Circus creator, another one. Creator Family Circus died in 2011, and they're still doing them.
And Family Circus very often had that sort of single image joke of like kind of like a New Yorker cartoon. It would be one image
circle
with a circle around it.
So here's the most recent Family Circus. It's the husband and wife in the kitchen. There's dogs eating on the floor. And the wife says to the husband, "This is the first sitting. You have reservations for the second."
Uh-huh.
Let's see yesterday's.
Please.
Okay, it's two kids. They expect me to remember the names of these kids. Name me one Family Circus character.
Mom?
Sure.
I bet her name is just Mom. I'd be gobsmacked if, like, she had a
maybe
name.
If it's, like, Meredith or something. There's two kids. One of them's holding a toy car and is saying, "This car already has 10,000 miles on it. It came from China."
Is that a
Trump
car for clunkers joke?
Like,
cash for clunkers? Well, it's funny that you bring up Trump because there seems to be a lot of conservatism in the creators of these comics, right? Jim Davis says he's political, but he's friends with Pence. You've got what's his name? The guy who did Dilbert is very openly conservative and political.
This, I'm just reading one more Family Circus. This is one that I just don't understand.
Yeah.
The mom's pulling a roast out of the oven, and the little girl goes, "Oh boy, roast beef. I know two of my toes are going to be happy."
Oh, because like the pigs, right? This little piggy went to market. This little piggy ate roast beef. This little piggy ran all the way home.
Okay.
You get it?
That still doesn't make it funny, though.
No. Do you like Peanuts?
Yes. I think what helped Peanuts a lot, I think, was definitely the Christmas special.
Yes.
But I think the fact that it had this sort of presence on TV helped the comic, because it was like it gave like a second life to the comics.
Yeah.
Whereas I think if you only ever had the comics, you might read the characters a little differently.
Yeah.
Like, if you read especially the much older Peanuts comics.
Right. I actually have a book here called The Art of Charles M. Scholes. It's got a lot of the early stuff, which, by the way, is cuter. They were drawn more like babies.
Right. It's cute. Like you read the characters differently.
And, it doesn't have the jazz score. Mm. It does. It just, somehow it's not as, I don't know. I always found it to be a bummer.
It feels like Depression era children, which I guess is what the original cartoon was.
The original cartoon is really just, it's the way he described it is, it's kids acting like adults, but not in a South Park way where they're just saying fuck. In a way where, even though they're children, they're world weary.
Yeah.
They are sometimes contemplative. They're sometimes resolved in a way that a child rarely is. Sometimes they are put upon in a way that only really an old person could just be like, "Oh, fuck me. Everything sucks." I mean, isn't that what Charlie Brown is? He's a little kid that's like, "Everything sucks." And he's like, "Oh, fuck me, man."
In the final strip, did he kick the football?
I think he doesn't. We could look that up.
I would love to see like what comics are in right now, like in a newspaper. Like, I did not bring a newspaper, sadly. I'm not going to buy that shit.
No. Well, that's the interesting thing, because this is an artistic medium that's tied very closely to a physical medium, which right. is not dead, because they've been saying newspapers will die since the publication of books.
Right, that's a red herring. The medium is... The media.
Marshall McLuhan, the media scholar, said medium is the message. What he meant was looking at how the information is transmitted to you is what's important. Right. Not necessarily, like, if Marshall McLuhan were alive now and he were looking at, like, say, texts, he would be less interested in what we're texting to each other, but how the way we text each other affects our communication.
Yeah.
Peanuts, created by Charles M. Schulz, ran from October 2, 1950 to February 13th, 2000, and is still rerun. It has 17,897 strips.
Wow.
In total.
I wonder, like, what a cartoonist for a newspaper gets paid.
God, that's an interesting question.
Because I feel like probably, if this was, like, the mid-80s, they'd be like, this is my job.
Right. Well, it's probably, like, you probably have to be your own business, because you probably get paid something reasonable from every syndicated paper. So you've got, you know, 200 checks coming in, and that'll add up, right? There's no way I can't see a way that you're all getting it in one lump sum, because you're really, it's syndication in a way, like, that syndication doesn't exist anymore. You know what I mean?
Right. Unless, like, you're incorporated and you're paying. Let me just Google that. Like, what? How much does a newspaper cartoonist get made?
The last comic.
Well, not as much as you'd think.
No, I mean, the average, if you're not huge.
Right.
Like, what could you possibly, also, why would you, who really just goes right into it now? You would go into digital.
Right.
The last Peanuts comic is color, and it's large, and it's really kind of a, it's not really a comic. It's a bunch of, almost like a collage of images in the background, and it's just a letter. Dear friends, I have been fortunate to draw Charlie Brown and his friends for almost 50 years.
Oh, so it's not the real last.
Right, it's not really a bit. It's just him sort of saying, all right, goodbye.
I have to go now. My planet needs me.
Charles Schulz. I always used to think it was Schultz.
I was always Schultz, too.
And they call
it's
him...
It's got a Z at the end.
They call him Sparky.
Sparky?
Yeah.
Never heard that.
Yeah.
You know what's a comic I always forget because it came out, like, way later? It probably should have just been a digital comic. Is Boondocks.
Yeah. That was a comic, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I never really read Boondocks. I never really read a lot of comics. This is something that I'm not very familiar with. Mm.
Yeah, again, the comic section, like, sort of had its own vibe. And then there was, like, games near the end of the comic section, like... Now it would probably just be Sudoku, but it was always like some kid's word jumble.
Uh-huh.
And then, yeah, like I said, it would be broken up into, like, you get the big things on the front, you get some political cartoons in there.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the history. So the earliest cartoons are basically political cartoons.
Yeah.
But then a lot of newspapers had illustrations. Mm. Not cartoons, but just drawn illustrations. But then when they start printing photography in newspapers, photography sort of takes over, and then it's like, what do these illustrators do? And a lot of them become these cartoonists.
Yeah.
And a lot of the early ones are like Popeye, Blondie and Dagwood, Buck Rogers, Flash Gordon.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, like, where comics... Because it seems like there was a big comics boom in the 70s. Like, that's uh-huh. where all these sort of, like... And Peanuts, I guess, was around much longer, but, like, uh-huh. your Garfields...
Yeah.
And, like, all your sort of mid-range comics, like, came out around then.
Well, we had the Garfield animated show in the 80s as a Saturday morning show, which is really what I think of when I think of Garfield.
I think of the long
We're
books.
Ready to party. Get ready. I hope you brought lots of spaghetti. Come on in. Come to the place where fun never ends. Come on in. Just join the party with Garfield and friends. Garfield and friends. And then there'd be a gag that was different in every episode. One of the first really popular comic strips was The Yellow Kid by, what's his name? Alcott. And the interesting thing about The Yellow Kid was he began in one New York paper, the Pulitzer paper.
Okay.
And then William Randolph Hearst, who ran the other big New York paper, was like, hey, I'll pay you more. Come work with me. And they was like, ah, sure. And then Pulitzer was like, oh, I'll pay you more. And like literally he
kept going back and forth.
Right. Papers. And because he's the yellow kid, we refer to that period as yellow journalism. But yellow journalism comes from
the... Yellow journalism is a completely different thing, though.
Going to the content outside of the comics, what Pulitzer was doing and what Hearst were doing was this sensational storytelling. It was all very dramatic. It was all very serialized, so you'd come back.
Yeah.
It was all a penny, because now after the Industrial Revolution, you could make them for a penny and everyone could read them. So the yellow comes from the yellow kid, even though the connotation now with yellow is trash. Like, if you said, oh, that's just yellow journalism, it would be an insult.
Yeah, like, I'm blanking on the name, but, like, there was a guy back then that was, like, the Rush Limbaugh of his time.
Uh-huh.
And I wish I could remember the name of him. But, like, people think, like, oh, this political, like, hoopla and, like, fake news stuff only started in, like, the late 80s, early 90s of talk radio. It's like, nah, it's been going on a lot longer. It's just, there was a long period in our history where we didn't really question it.
You're right.
Like, from the, I would say, 60s up to the late 80s, there seemed to be this long period of, like, well, the guy's on TV telling me what the news is.
Right.
And that's it.
The earliest American papers, the colonial papers, were all funded specifically by political parties. And it was usually basically anti-crown. It's they're really treating us like shit. And then it's just like, yeah, they are.
It's interesting. We're kind of like getting back to the way like the original newspapers were.
Right. So the idea of news being objective, the standard of objectivity as like this is the gold standard, was not always there.
No, and some would argue that that's a bad thing.
It was rarely ever there. Yeah.
Well, it was rarely ever there, but that it's also like a bad thing to hide behind. Because like there's no way to not have a bias.
Right. Was it, I think it was,
like, wouldn't it be better if like you watched MSNBC and Fox News and knew that, okay, you're gonna get full on socialism.
Here's where we're coming
lefty
from.
Stuff.
Right.
And then with Fox News, like, they hide it less. But, like, wouldn't it be great if you knew that, like, okay, well, this is the platform of the right.
Right. But the funny thing is they both call themselves objective.
Yeah, like, no spin zone.
Right. Fair and balanced. MSNBC, I don't know if this is still their motto, but it was lean forward as opposed to lean left.
Yeah.
So objectivity is still like the imaginary standard. I think it was Hunter S. Thompson who said something like, and I might be wrong about it being Hunter S. Thompson, and I'm probably paraphrasing this all wrong, but it was something like, the more you try to hold on to truth, the more it slips through your fingers.
Yeah.
Like, just fucking say you hate fucking, you know, Nixon, and now we know where they're coming from.
Right. Like, I would rather have that. Like, now I know where you're, exactly. Like, now I know where you're coming from.
Yeah.
And it holds more weight then if that same person, like, all of a sudden then goes, well, you know what? I actually like what Trump's doing on this issue. Then it's like, well, wait a minute. What's going on here? Like, that's where you would find, like, the common ground, like, the real common ground.
Right. Now, let me bring up something that we have not touched upon yet. And in some ways, this is the anti-Garfield.
Ooh.
And what I'm talking about, of course, kids, is Calvin and Hobbes.
Oh, yeah.
I say anti-Garfield because
there's no merchandise.
Yeah. Famously, Bill Watterson, the creator, never allowed, even like simple things like a doll. You know what I mean? Kids would love a doll of Hobbes. And he was like, no, I'm sorry, I don't want to do it. Really almost, I think, as a message to fucking Jim Davis.
Oh, yeah. Like,
and so Calvin and Hobbes began in 1985 and ran to 1995, just 10 years.
Yeah, it made a huge impact.
It has a huge cultural impact. And if you don't know Calvin and Hobbes, it's this very sort of simple comic that's very whimsical. And it's about a boy and his imaginary friend. His imaginary friend is a tiger named Hobbes. And, you know, the shit they do together. And I believe Watterson doesn't allow himself to be interviewed.
No, very rarely will he do an interview.
Yeah.
And In fact, it was a big deal a couple of years ago where there's like a newer comic strip. I think it's called like Pearls Before Swine, where the creator was like a big Bill Watterson fan. And Bill Watterson, unbeknownst to nobody but this guy, guest drew a couple strips.
Oh, really?
And it was like a huge deal because it was like, oh my God, he's kind of come out of retirement.
Wow. Imagine only doing it for 10 years, though. And we're, but we're mentioning it along with like Garfield and Peanuts. Like
50-year runs of comics.
Right.
And it's funny that like he didn't do the merchandising thing, but what's the first like item that people think of when they think of Calvin and Hobbes, like merchandise per se?
Him peeing.
Yeah.
Him, the image of him peeing on something, which is not something Calvin would do. Calvin was not cynical.
Right.
I'm actually looking at this website is called Trivia Happy, which I've never heard of. This article is called The Tasteless History of the Peeing Calvin Decal. A bootleg,
well, he'll pee on anything.
A bootleg empire. First things first, Bill Watterson says he has nothing to do with it. He's very much against licensing his stuff. So bootlegs emerged. Let's see. Oh, so there is a comic strip from 1988 where Calvin has his back to us. And that's probably where at least the design comes from. He's not peeing, but his back is to us.
Some freak just added the urine.
Yeah. It's amazing, though, that it's so...
It's synonymous.
It's such a prevalent meme.
Not only is it like a meme, like...
It's a meme in the true sense of a meme, a cultural idea.
Like, you like go through any parking lot.
Yeah.
And you're going to see, like, you're going to see Hobbs peeing on something.
Well, in the 90s... Cops in South Carolina were ticketing drivers who had the decals.
Oh, wow.
Same thing happened later in Alabama. God, it's weird.
That would always see it as like a sports thing. People would always have it like Yankees fans would have it like, oh, he's peeing on a Red Sox logo. Or
yeah. Something. Well, this gets into a whole nother conversation that I'd love to have, which is bootlegging. I've become a bootlegger. You could see my Baby Yoda painting.
Yeah.
I went to a class, one of those classes where...
you drink wine and you...
We actually didn't drink wine, but it was basically that idea, and it was Baby Yoda, so I have a Baby Yoda. I didn't design it. It was... It's actually based on a bootleg that I'm sure the person teaching my class didn't create.
Yeah.
But Baby Yoda, because there are no Mandalorian toys...
People are making the Baby Yoda.
Like Calvin and Hobbes, the demand is there, so bootleg, and I love bootleg stuff.
Oh, I love it too.
Thinking of... I'm sorry, go on.
Like, I always go right to bootleg Simpsons merchandise.
I was just going to say, I think about going down, like, a New Jersey boardwalk in the summer and seeing, like, Rastafarian Bart. Bart
with so many black Barts.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's
Bart,
funny because...
A lot of, like, Bart, there were, like... It's weird because there were, like, several groups of Bart t-shirts.
Right.
Like, there were the black Bart t-shirts where it's, like, Bart with, like, Afro-centric clothing on.
Yeah.
There was the pro-Iraq war Barts.
Yeah.
Where it'd be like, bomb Saddam, man. Like,
yeah.
Then there were like the anti like AIDS Bart.
What do you think this became so prevalent? Because this was not a situation where there was no merchandising. There was a lot of merchandising. There was
tons of
all sorts of dolls and stuff, yet the Bart bootlegs were prevalent.
I think it's just a matter of, like, The Simpsons was just so big that, like, everyone wanted to get in on it.
And it was so irreverent, perhaps.
That you could, that, like, slip in.
What would be more irreverent than bootleg, using it to bootleg?
Right.
Interesting.
Like, I love, on Portlandia, the sketch with the, where, like, Matt Groening takes someone to court.
Oh, I never saw that
one. With a bootleg Bart shirt, and it's, like, a ska group, and it's, like, Bart Scampson, and it's him, like Scott, like, skanking.
Okay.
Like, this is big gangly Bart like Scott.
Is it actually him? Is it actually Matt Groening?
Yeah.
Well, Matt Groening had a comic strip, Life in Hell. Did you ever? I've never actually read that. I've always just heard of it.
I've read it. It only stopped a couple of years ago.
Oh, is that right?
And he would do it not in any like big papers. He made a point to only do it for like local. Like if he, I don't think it ran in New York, but if it did, it would be in the Village Voice.
Oh, really? Was it, what kind of humor was it?
Because
if you look, like, I'm, the early Tracy Ullman shorts, before Simpsons became its own series, were very much kind of like animated strips. They would be very short little things.
Yeah.
And the comedy there is so different from the comedy in The Simpsons proper. Oh, and yeah. I wonder if I would recognize it at all as being Simpsons-like.
Probably, but I honestly don't know. Like, it's very... It's hard to really describe Life in Hell because it's...
Was it like Far Side where it was something different all the time, or was there
a It was something different all the time. There was like a rotating group of characters.
Oh, there was. Okay.
They were like the rabbit-looking characters.
Oh, right.
Who were gay.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
I remember early on they wanted Marge to have rabbit ears under her hair as like a weird homage to him. And
he was just like, no, we're not going to do
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
yeah. It's funny supposedly, that he very much like only wrote a couple episodes of The Simpsons.
Right.
Like he does not have
he's not
that much to do with the success of The Simpsons.
But I'm sure it lines his fucking pockets.
Oh my God. Like you want to talk about a merchandising powerhouse.
Oh my God.
Especially like now that they're owned by Disney too.
Oh shit.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Simpsons are owned by Disney.
What a world we live in.
What a crazy
I feel
world.
Like we don't talk about that. We talk about so many other things.
Yeah,
we talk about Marvel and Star Wars. It's like The Simpsons now is on. And there's been interesting Simpsons stuff coming from Disney Plus, like Bart as Iron Man and like them making fun of the fact that Disney owns them.
But like that's also something that oddly like everyone predicted was like they're going to get taken over by Disney and then what's the first thing that's going to happen? They're going to do a commercial for Disney. That's like backhanded, like, oh, we're taking a knock at Disney, but we're owned by them.
Well, it's like, how can you, you're part of the system. How can you really be subversive? Although I do love the Banksy opening.
Yes, that was good.
The Banksy, if you've never seen the Banksy couch gag for The Simpsons, it is such a fuck you to 20th Century Fox and Fox News and The Simpsons itself.
Yeah.
Obviously at the end of every Simpsons opening, they get to the couch and there's a couch gag. But in this one, it gets to the couch and then you see its cell, its animated, which is perfect deconstruction. You see this is a cartoon. It's an animated cell. And then you see characters that are that look to be Asian all in like a sweatshop painting.
So basically like the Korean,
which is how animation and The Simpsons is made. You outsource it and use cheap labor and completely exploit another country's labor.
Yeah.
And he put it in the opening. It's really extraordinary if you've ever seen it.
Well, that's also The Simpsons, people forget, is allowed to get away with so much. Like they've always made Fox News jokes and like Fox corporate jokes.
Because it's really its own.
They have a special deal.
Yeah.
Because James L. Brooks is the producer. And long, long ago, he basically, like the network in the first couple seasons, were like, apparently sent them a bunch of notes. And he was like, look, if you ever want to work with me again.
Right.
Like, you will put in our contract right now that like we have free reign. We're allowed to do pretty much whatever we want. And like, you can only send us like the barest of like censor notes.
Right. People listening might not understand is when The Simpsons started, James L. Brooks was hot as shit.
Cheers.
But he also directed really good movies.
Yeah.
He was like super, super, super.
He was a big power player.
He was more powerful than he is now. And he made this fucking beautiful sweetheart deal of like, you know, it's probably more him than Matt Groening.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then, of course, you can't discount people like Conan and you know, what's his name?
Like, the writers made that show. Like, there's no question
Jean
about it.
Al Jean's been there the entire time, I think.
Yeah. Bill Oakley and Josh Weinstein.
Right. Who was the one? Oh, the really good one. He writes books now.
John Swartzwelder?
Swartzwelder, yeah.
He's one of my favorite writers of any TV ever, because he's just such a weird... First off, he's a fucking weirdo.
Right.
Like, he...
He also doesn't do interviews and stuff, right?
He famously does not do interviews.
Right.
He looks like, what's his face? David Crosby.
Okay.
So, like, whenever you see, because this was sort of a long-running Simpsons thing, is, like, every once in a while, people would notice in crowd scenes, like, a David Crosby. And they'd be like, why do you guys put David Crosby in these crowd scenes?
Yeah.
And they're like, that's not David Crosby. That's John Swartzwelder. And apparently, like, California had, like, some smoking ban that, like, they couldn't smoke in their studio anymore.
Yeah.
So So he got like, or no, it was like you couldn't smoke in diners, and he had a favorite diner.
Right. Well, he would always draw in that diner.
He would always draw and write. He would always write in that diner. So he bought the diner booth and just put it in his house.
What kind of fucking Unabomber shit is that?
He would only see. He never went to the movies. He would only go to the movies to see the latest Stanley Kubrick movie.
Of course. That is amazing.
And he basically like.
Was he a Harvard guy? Was he one of those Harvard guys?
Yeah. I don't know about Harvard, but he came from. He wrote for SNL alongside Conan.
Oh, really?
And he also came from George Meyer's Army Man magazine.
George Meyer, another person.
Another person. But John Swartzwelder also, he has a few trademarks that, like, if I tell you the trademarks, you'll immediately recognize.
Really?
Oh, that's why these are my favorite episodes.
Oh, really?
Like, I all of his trademarks are, like, anything that's, like, old-timey Americana.
Okay.
Like, homeless people, like, old-fashioned, like, hobo homeless people.
Yes.
Outdated and convoluted schemes and ideas.
Okay.
That, like, just don't work anymore. So, like, anytime someone, like, builds a contraption of some kind and it's, like, way too complex, that's his calling card.
Oh, really?
Anytime there's, like, a great example of a John Swartzwelder episode is the one with the Beer Baron.
Okay.
Because that's, like, full of his hallmarks. Like,
I don't remember that one. What was that?
That's the one where they enact Prohibition in Springfield. And then Homer starts, like, making liquor on his own by, like, and he starts making, like, bathtub liquor. And then, like, puts it in bowling balls and, like, rolls them to Moe's. And then, like, the Beer Baron comes after him. And it's, like, this classic, like, Elliot Ness style, like, where's the hooch, Rummy? Yeah. Like that kind of guy. And it's, like, that's a classic, like, Swartzwelder trope.
Okay.
He also wrote the Hank Scorpio episode.
Okay.
Which is a classic.
Oh, classic.
Which has a lot of great, like, lines and, like, weird esoteric gags in it. He's written the most Simpsons episodes by far. I think it's, like, 50-something, 57, 58.
Wow.
Something like that.
Wow.
So he's written probably all of your favorites.
Yeah. We need a whole Simpsons episode.
Oh, yeah.
Before we wrap up, I actually want to bring it back to something that I really am into now, which is Strange Planet by Nathan W. Pyle.
Ooh, I love that. I love those aliens.
Yes. Aliens. If you're not familiar with Strange Planet, you might be familiar with it, but you just don't know it.
Yeah, this was a meme that, like, went around.
Right, right. It's their webcomics of aliens. And how do you describe the humor? They are, it's sort of very deconstructionist. It's these aliens, and they're sort of gray aliens with no hair, you know, kind of like, yeah, alien aliens. And they are doing something that we would do, but describing it in such perfect, transparent language. Like, one that me and my girlfriend quote a lot is, they go to the movie theater and they want, and, you know, what happens is they go to the movie theater and they buy popcorn. Mm. But what happens in the comic is they go and one alien is like, would you like grains?
Yeah.
And he's like, I would love grains. And then he's like, it's something like, do you want dairy milked from cows and pasteurized put on the grain? And he's like, yes, that is the point of the grain. Which is like, do you want butter? Yes, yeah. So me and my girlfriend always say, that is the point of the grain. And it's shit like that. Like, there's a little kid in the family, and, you know, another one that I always think of is, he's scared and he's like, please leave the corridor light on. A lot of people love this stuff and it gets shared a lot. A lot of people don't like Pyle anymore because he's pro-life. I'm pro-choice, but I'm sophisticated enough to read a comic written by somebody who's pro-life. Cancel me. I don't know. Yeah. What do you want? What do you want from me? The guy's pro-life. He writes good comics. What the fuck? I don't, you know what I mean? They're not, I don't, there's nothing in the text to me that reads as pro-life propaganda.
Didn't he also, because, like, people tried to cancel him and he was like, well, look, I don't give money to bad corporations, right? Like, that's just my stance. I'm just pro-life.
I think he retweeted some pro-life thing and Twitter got really on him. Well, you know, there's tons and tons of stuff you could pick up. I used to love to read Garfield while I shat.
Oh.
Just keep it in the bathroom.
Well, Garfield had, like, the perfect...
Oh, every one of them. There's 1,000 books. Like, literally every one of them is...
And they're all this... They're, like, long.
Yeah.
They're long books. And I had the Garfield holiday pack.
Oh, really?
Where it had, like, the Garfield Halloween one.
Yeah.
And, like, The Thanksgiving one and the Christmas one. The Halloween one was, like, actually scary.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, there's one.
Because that's what became the cartoon special.
Right. There's one where, there's one Halloween one where he kind of dies in it, or you could read it as dying.
Oh, yeah.
Where, and like, there's this fan theory that everything past that is a fucking Jacob's Ladder-like nightmare.
Yeah.
There's also Garfield Without Garfield, which is it's Garfield strips, but they would take out Garfield and just have John talking to himself.
Because that's really what it is.
Right, because Garfield doesn't speak, he thinks.
Right, like, we just read the comic, and I bet a lot of people would assume that, like, in the world of the comic, he talks.
Right, but even if you listen to the cartoon, it might sound like they're talking to each other, but they're not.
Right.
Well, Garfield will respond to John, but John can't hear him.
Right, John will never, you're right, if you pay attention, John will never respond. One of my favorite, like, Garfield spin-off, it has nothing to do with Garfield, Jim Davis did not sign off on this, but have you ever seen Lasagna Cat?
No, it's Lasagna Cat.
Oh my god. Lasagna Cat is a web series that someone made where it starts out with them in live action doing a Garfield strip.
Uh-huh.
And then, like, the whole rest of the video is just, like, weird, surrealist takes. Like, let me look up... I'm going to pull up a Lasagna Cat, and then I'm going to tell you, after explaining to you what it is, what they did a couple years ago when they came back.
Because mm-hmm.
this was a thing for, like, a couple years, and then they left and came back. Justin Roiland from Rick and Morty, like, was part of a recent one.
Oh, okay.
And all the titles are just, like, the dates of the comics. Like, this one is 6/8/2001.
Mm-hmm. Well, is this similar to Dolan Duck?
A little bit. I would say so. So here's one that's, like, pretty safe. Dum-dee-dum,
dum-dum-dee-dee, la-la-la-la. The guy who looks like John with a bad wig on.
Hi. Got a little too into the hold song.
Wait. But then it shows.
Wait.
Kenny G Songbird, Lasagna Cat. Lasagna Cat, who basically is like a mascot of Garfield, is on a horse, looking sexy. Odie's like Kenny G. Very odd.
Like, every one of them takes, like, one weird thing about the comic.
Yeah.
And then, like, spins it off into a weird, surreal thing for the last, like, couple minutes.
That's really interesting.
Like, they did one where, John accidentally puts, like, the wrong shampoo in his hair.
Yeah.
And then it does the thing where it shows the comic, and then... and then the rest of... And, like, the surreal part, it turns into, like, this sexy music video.
Uh-huh.
And John's dressed like a geisha girl, and then it turns into basically like a bukkake video, where like they're all like pouring shampoo over his hair, and he's like, "Oh yes, yes," like, and it's just so weird.
That kind of stuff is so insincere. Whereas, like, one of the things I think that's charming about comics, or at least the funny kind of comics, is that there is an odd sincerity to them.
Oh yeah.
Well, Vin, this has been an interesting episode. Hopefully, if you haven't read any of this stuff, you'll go and you can find a lot of stuff online. Google this stuff. Pick it up. It's fun, easy reads.
Yeah, go read. Well, don't read. I was going to say go read Dilbert.
Nah, you don't need to read Dilbert.
Dilbert was like when Office Space came out and everyone was like putting Dilbert strips on their cubicle wall.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't need to read Dilbert.
Yeah, it's stick it to my boss. Put this Dilbert comic up and hope he sees it.
This is PCMC. This podcast is available anywhere podcasts can be found. I'm your host, Mike Bongiorno, and I'm here with Vin Forte.
Yeah.
We end every episode by saying a go bye-bye.